Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is June 18th, 2017, and this is the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, episode 139, E3 2017. Welcome once again, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
We are so sorry for going so long between episodes, but unfortunately, you know, we, sort of had some behind-the-scenes issues here. Slagkick had taken a vacation. I had a medical situation that, by doctor's orders, had me taking a few weeks of relaxation and taking, you know, care of myself. And that meant not recording some podcasts that I would have really loved to do, including our annual, you know, E3 blowout of doing three episodes in 3 days. Really sorry we could not provide that for you this year, but I want to be doing this for a long, long time, maybe copying in the steps of Orange Lounge Radio, who, as we speak, are celebrating their 15-year anniversary.
Oh my gosh.
But in order to get there, we have to take care of ourselves and each other. With that in mind, we have a ton to talk about this week. It's going to be a packed episode, so let's start digging in. Slaggy, do you want to get us going with our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits?
Yeah, our first follow-up comes from BioWare. As you might have been familiar with, there was a lack of male same-sex romance for Mass Effect Andromeda. They recently released patch 1.08. I believe that's now in game, right?
That is correct.
And you are able to romance Jahl, who is one of your squad mates. Previously, he was only dateable by female writers, but now male writers can be, I guess, male writers of Jahl, so to speak.
Ooh-wee. Let me ask you, Slaggy. I know for myself, I have been waiting for this patch before I dig into Andromeda. Now that this has hit, are you going to be starting to look in the direction of Andromeda?
I mean, I just built a new gaming PC with your help, so it'd probably be a good time as long as they fixed some of the other bugs, too. It sounds like they have been working on that.
Well, yeah, so there have been multiple previous patches, so the game is apparently already in a much tighter shape than it launched.
Well, that's great news, and they had consulted with LGBTQ staff and community members when writing the new relationship, so I'm looking forward to it, and for an alien, he's pretty hot. You know, I could definitely see some cues from Garrus, you know. So, yes.
Excellent, excellent. All right. We also have word that IO Interactive is officially a independent studio. And we also have fantastic news in that IO Interactive is now officially the rights holder for Hitman. You know, a lot of us were worried that Square Enix was going to leave IO Interactive high and dry. They weren't going to let them keep the Hitman IP. You know, all of their work on Hitman Season 2 was going to end up being thrown away. Very, very, very happy that we have now confirmed that is not the case. Hitman Season 2 is going to be coming. It is going to be by IO Interactive. And as a side note, they will not be sticking with the much-discussed alternative release structure that they had used for the first season of content. I think this will probably benefit the game, even though I am on record as being a fan of that style of release. Slaggy, what do you think overall?
Yeah, I mean, we'll just kind of have to see how it shapes up, and I think that it's good news for IO and for the franchise, and, you know, we'll see how the change in release model, so to speak, affects it, but I guess, you know, it's better than not having Hitman at all, right? Or having it done by some studio who's going to mess it up.
Yeah, absolutely. We also have word here, and, you know, we'll be discussing the particulars a little later, but quite a few people were surprised at E3 this week that Nintendo announced a fair amount of support for the 3DS platform. And we have word from Reggie that Nintendo will not only be supporting the 3DS into 2018, but they may well be doing so beyond 2018.
I mean, it's looking at like a 10-year at least lifespan for it. But I mean, the DS lived on for about 10 years.
Yeah.
So,
hey,
I guess this just means that I'm going to have to get a 2DS XL.
Yes, you're going to have to get one. Yeah, I will say, you know, if they keep bringing great software out, while I would rather be playing it on my Switch, I will play good games wherever I can get them.
Yeah, that's where I'm at, too. And at this point, I'm just basically waiting for a collector's edition 2DS XL to be announced. And, new 2DS XL. And then I guess I'm going to be getting, like, my fifth XL, 3DS, whatever. I don't know. In other news, Hironobu, why can't I say his name? Hironobu Sakaguchi-san is going to be revealing a new Mistwalker game on June 22nd, so not too long after you hear this episode.
And you know, this is interesting because we had previously heard we were going to get the Mistwalker reveal in June, and I think a lot of people had figured that meant E3. A lot of people thus were surprised when we did not get a Mistwalker announcement at E3. So it's just kind of funny to think about how we do that. Like, they previously just said June, and we all assumed it was E3 and got super bummed, but...
It's going to be a Famitsu live stream.
Yeah, so definitely something to look forward to, and Uematsu-san has been confirmed to be a guest on that stream, so... Start raising those expectations.
What you maybe shouldn't raise your expectations for is Concept releasing Mighty No. 9 for 3DS and Vita in 2017. Although, in their latest update for Kickstarter backers, they said that they are hoping to be able to have that... out and
in 2017,
in 2017, and that they're hoping that most of the physical rewards that are still missing should be going out by mid-August.
Well, and I know some of our listeners have been very vocal on Twitter about having not received their physical backer rewards yet. So if any of you out there are listening and want to write in, I'm curious, what do you think? Is this assurance enough for you? Are you more accepting of this now, or are you still upset and or concerned by this situation? You know, I was not expecting physical backer rewards from Mighty No. 9, so I don't really have a lot of feelings on that, but definitely curious what all of y'all out there that are directly impacted by this statement, how y'all feel. We also have word out of Square Enix, and this is a really surprising one. Kingdom Hearts HD 1.5 plus 2.5 got both a patch and, in a first for the Kingdom Hearts series, some optional DLC. That DLC is free. I'm seeing it referred to as a patch online in quite a few different places, but it is technically an optional DLC download. You don't have to grab it, which is good, because one of the pieces of DLC in this case is like 10 gigs of space, which, if you're still running your stock PS4 hard drive, you might not have space for. The patch, which is requisite and will auto-install, fixes a lot of the glitches that the game was having relating to the physics engine being updated for 60 frames a second refresh rate. You know, some fights were sort of broken a little bit because meters were building at twice the speed they were designed for. People are finding that, you know, some of the combat situations were not correctly responding because enemies would be like moving too far or not moving far enough from how they were designed, and so their attacks were basically coming out broken, in some cases for good, in some cases for bad. So most of that stuff has now been fixed. The rare save bug that would happen in Kingdom Hearts 2, where if you didn't save frequently enough, your save could end up getting corrupted during the saving process, that has been fixed. So some real good stuff here. And the two optional pieces of downloadable content, one is a theater mode for Kingdom Hearts 1, which is something that Kingdom Hearts 1 has pretty much always needed. I think that's really cool, but it is a 10 gig download. So a lot of people are thinking that these are probably like straight up you're downloading new video files of every cinema in Kingdom Hearts 1, because the way the game was designed previously, they did not have a theater mode built in, and for whatever reason, you know, the game engine probably didn't really support just straight up playing the files as they're in the game presently. The other cool thing is that the movie version of 358 Days Over 2 has been given an additional cutscene. So this is a cutscene that is available in the theater menu. My understanding is that it relates to sort of more of the endgame type stuff involving Shion and Roxas, but that isn't necessarily a whole lot of information. That whole game is about Shion and Roxas. Anyway, I'm super excited to see it. I can't wait. I this update is available now. I just haven't gotten to watching 358 over 2 anytime recently, and I kind of want to watch the whole thing just to see if I can clock what's new.
Hey, just get some sea salt ice cream to cool down and put it on.
Ooh-wee, that's not a bad idea. All right, moving forward, we also have word here that the upcoming 3DS release of Coldicept Revolt will have GameStop exclusive pre-order DLC.
Ooh, who's that muscle daddy?
Pre-ordering the game at GameStop will get you access to the exclusive Challenge from Hell DLC, which will have a bonus quest and a new map that can be used in both single and multiplayer modes.
Challenge from Hell is what guys call trying to date me.
Anyway, I'm a big fan of Coldicept. I'll definitely be pre-ordering, and I guess now I might pre-order it from GameStop, much as that irritates me.
Right.
Because the more Coldicept I can get, the better. There was also an amazing new trailer for Kingdom Hearts 3. This is largely like a gameplay slash combat trailer, but there is a very, very interesting story tease toward the end of it. If you're a big Kingdom Hearts fan, you've probably already seen this, but if you haven't, you must. We also got word at the end of the trailer that Square Enix will be revealing an all-new Kingdom Hearts world and a new trailer at the D23 Expo next month on July 15th. Nomura-san has teased that people who were excited about this trailer should be several times more excited about that trailer.
Ooh.
So the Kingdom Hearts fandom is in an uproar, and I can't wait.
So next, we have some news from Yu Suzuki about Shenmue 3. It unfortunately has been delayed to the second half of 2018, but in the backer update, he basically says that, because they've been using new technologies, the game has become bigger than initially expected, and to be able to, kind of build on what he wants the game to be, they need some more time. So something Kickstarter delay, we're kind of used to this at this point, but if it means that it will be a quality product, that's what's most important.
Yeah, I will take a better game 100% of the time. I'll put up with the delay. We also have some release info updates. Wild Guns Reloaded will be releasing on Steam on July 4th. Earth Defense Force 5 has been delayed. It will be releasing later in 2017 in Japan. River City Knights of Justice will be releasing on June 20th. Ark Survival Evolved will be exiting its lengthy beta period on August 8th. Fantasy Life Online will be released sometime later in 2017. It had previously been announced for an April 2017 release. The PC version of Destiny 2 will be releasing on October 24th. The PS4 and Xbox One versions are still on track for September 6th. And Ni no Kuni 2 will be releasing on November 10th. Slaggy, do you have anything else to follow up?
Nope.
All right, then, let's hear it for some news.
News. News. News. Oh my god, news.
So our first piece of news is that we finally have the announcement of Dissidia Final Fantasy Arcade for consoles. That is Dissidia Final Fantasy NT for the PS4 coming early 2018. It'll more or less be the Dissidia Arcade game with some light story elements, although there won't be a story mode. However, it will tell some story parts that won't be in the arcade version. So,
and if you're wondering about what NT might mean, Square Enix has actually been amusingly cagey about it. They have not been willing to commit to, one thing that it means. They said that you could think of it as new tale, new trial, new tournament, or various other meanings composed of N's and T's.
So who's this kind of hot daddy with the big sword? I mean, I guess in Final Fantasy, that's not really specific enough.
You have
enough
to be more specific. Yeah, I'm like, Auron? What do you mean?
No, it's in this picture in the Silicon Era article with some angel.
There's a Silicon Era article? Where will we link that?
On GameBuie.org.
GameBuie.org. Yeah, no, he's like the villain of the story. He's like this game's equivalent of Chaos from the PSP versions.
I was going to say, I didn't recognize him, but ooh, happy Father's Day.
We also have word that .hack/GU is getting an HD remaster. This HD remaster is going to be released on PlayStation 4 and PC. It's called .hack/GU Last Recode. It's not just going to be a quote-unquote simple HD remaster, though. They will be introducing new elements and systems in addition to all of the content of the original work.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so very exciting. They say that their goal is to build enough on the original work that it feels like a new experience.
Excellent.
I'm very excited. I like .hack a lot, and I think that the time is right for a new .hack experience.
Well, it's its 50th anniversary, just like OLR.
Yep, just like OLR. even if it is a remake with new elements, I think the time is right for Dot Hack. I think that in a post
Sword Art Online?
Exactly. In a post Sword Art Online world, I think that there would be a lot of love for Dot Hack. So I can't wait. And I hope this HD remaster, or remake as the case may be, is tremendously successful.
Excellent. Well, we have some pretty big news in that Level 5 is now the owner of Comcept, and Keiji Inafune and co. will be working on a new smartphone game called Dragon Colonies. It's an RPG focusing on PvP and crafting worlds.
You know, I'm excited about this a little bit. I like Comcept. I have a lot of problems with how Mighty No. 9 played out. I have some problems with Inafune-san's business style, but fundamentally, I want that studio to be successful. I want them to be able to make good games, and I think Level 5 is probably mm-hmm. a good partner to get them on track and get them to start producing good content at a reliable enough clip in terms of release dates and, you know, really keeping efficient and productive. So I view this as a tremendously good sign, and, you know, I know a lot of people are really prone to hyperbole and really prone to anger and irritation to Comcept, and, you know, for a lot of people it is... well-placed. I totally appreciate it. If I felt like I got swindled out of money by them, I would be right there with you, probably.
Yeah.
As it stands, to me, this is a chance at a happy ending for Comcept, and I hope they get it.
Yeah, I think having Akihiro Hino-san's guidance will be good for Comcept, and Inafune-san was saying that, you know, they've been talking about working together ever since Guild Zero 2, so sounds like it'll be a good partnership.
Excellent, excellent. We also have word of a new Taiko no Tatsujin game for PlayStation 4. This is, of course, a little surprising to me because we typically see these Taiko no Tatsujin games getting released on portable consoles, but we already, first off, have an announcement of a Switch Taiko game. In addition, something really exciting, there will be a Taiko controller made connecting via USB for the PS4. So I am super, super excited. There are some songs that are going to be in this version that are Fire AF, so I'm super excited.
Yeah,
about
music
that.
Music from Your Name.
Right.
And Cruel Angel's Thesis.
I could go without Cruel Angel's Thesis in 2017, but, you know, I'm a big fan of Linda Linda, obviously. It'll be fun to have Pen Pineapple Apple Pen.
Uh-huh.
You know, there's going to be the requisite, you know, Namco Bandai medleys, including a new Tales of Berseria medley. I'm very excited about this. It's going to be releasing later in 2017, and the PS4 is region-free, so...
That's exciting.
I, you know, if you like me are a big fan of Taiko no Tatsujin, this is something to keep your eyes open on.
So there's going to be a Taiko party later this year.
Probably several.
All right. And the last bit of news before we move on to Culture Club, and very surprising news, we have the announcement of Bubsy, the Woolies Strike Back. This is not an April Fool's episode, everyone. This is June, our E3 episode, and there is a new Bubsy game. It is the first Bubsy game since Bubsy 3D 21 years ago. It's coming to PS4 and Steam. It's Bubsy's back.
You know, I'm going to catch a lot of flack for this, but I liked the original Bubsy games. I mean, I don't think they were good.
Wait,
replaying them now.
You talk shit about them so much, though.
Calm down. I don't think they're good games. They're Kusoge, basically. But back then, you know, you'd get a game and you'd play it a lot more. You would have a much higher tolerance for crap than I think we have now. And in their own way, you know, once you've spent so many hours with the game and you've learned how to actually progress in it, even if it's a shit game, it's hard not to be a little
partial
to it.
What could possibly go wrong?
It's hard not to like it a little bit, and so I cannot help but have a pure nostalgia-based excitement for this game. I will absolutely be playing it. It looks like a Bubsy revival, for better and for worse.
And it's being published by Accolade, who is back now.
Wow. We'll talk about this one more in the future, I'll tell you
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Bubsy cast.
maybe next April Fool's, I don't know. All right, all that having been said, I want to move on to our Culture Club. And Culture Club is going to be a little different this week, you know, because we're going to be talking so much during our discussion topic about E3, about all of the press events. I really wanted to sort of cut down on all of our individual individual segments, so I've just crammed it all into Culture Club this week. So we're going to talk a little bit about games culture, about the culture surrounding games, some stuff that normally might be controversial or doom and gloomy, and maybe even a smash in there. Slaggy, why don't you get us started?
Gladly. The first is something that's been, just in the past day or so, blowing up on social media, and that is
possibly because today is Father's Day.
Yeah.
And happy Father's Day, BT-Dub.
Yes.
Not to you, to our listeners who might have children.
And that's actually, I say like the past day, but it was actually announced today on Father's Day. And this is Dream Daddy, which is a dad dating sim.
Yes.
In which you are playing a dad who moves into a town with your daughter. You're a single dad with a daughter, and you move into a neighborhood full of single dads. There is a ability to build that dad, and then it's like says, looking good, daddy. There are 7 dateable dads, the ability to create your own dadsona. And a lot of people are really feeling this. It's being done by people involved with the Game Grumps. I'm only really familiar with them by name. I'm, you know, kind of newer to the Twitch and streaming and kind of YouTube gaming culture. I haven't really followed it that much, but, you know, I know that that's definitely, those are folks that have, they're not just randos. So I just only hope that, you know, it seems like it's being done respectfully and, you know, not as a LOL gay thing. It looks like it's actually being done, like, legit. So yep. I am here for it.
I am still somewhat trepidatious for the same reasons. It is my understanding that a lot of the people behind the scenes on this game are hetero men. But that having been said, you know, first off, Game Grumps, as things go, are one of the more welcoming communities as far as, like, you know, YouTube personalities and what have you. They are actually one of the more accepting groups. So I'm a little less concerned, given that it's them, than I would be with some other ones. But it's still hard not to be fearful, you know? Anytime I hear, cishet folks are going to be making this game that is, all about queer themes and characters, it's hard not to think, man, how are we going to get misrepresented and pigeonholed and offended this time?
Mm-hmm.
But credit where it's due. It's a cute idea. The trailer, I thought, was uproarious, and I didn't see anything that I took issue with there, and that's already a good sign.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is just I really don't know a lot about Game Grumps, except that JonTron used to be part of them, and he's done some problematic things.
But you have to consider that used to be.
Right.
So...
Ego Raptors. That's right. Ego Raptors, the main guy now.
Yeah, and Ego Raptors good. Like, that's a big pro for me.
And the other guy's from the band Ninja Sex Party, and they seem like they're pretty legit and fun. So, anyway, it'll be out on July 13th on Steam. So, we'll be dating our dream daddy.
Yes. Slaggy, you linked this one to me, so I'd like you to start the discussion. I know what I want to say about it, but I'm curious what you have to say about it.
Yeah, this is about Final Fantasy XIV and Blitzball. So Yoshi P is basically saying that they still want to add Blitzball to the game, but he's torn between two options and isn't sure which way he wants to take it. This, of course, would be an implementation in some way of the underwater sport that was introduced in Final Fantasy X. His two ideas are, one being that you could basically be a Blitzball player. He worries that that would be something that would kind of lose some steam after the novelty of it wore off. The other idea he has is that you would be the coach or the manager of your own Blitzball team, which is, to be noted, something that you also do in Final Fantasy X. And so it'd be kind of more like scouting out NPCs to be part of your Blitzball roster. And his concern with that is that people are like, oh, well, you know, I want to play Blitzball. So it's just kind of, either way, I think that's really cute that Blitzball is going to be coming to 14. Which version would you prefer, Captain Spike?
Both. Real talk, you know, Final Fantasy X already had both of these in the game, so why not just do it that way? If people want to directly play in their Blitzball league, you know, that the team that they're managing, they want their player character to be a team member also, give that bad option. But, you know, if you don't want to do that, don't make it mandatory so that you can do just the sim stuff. Mm-hmm. That, to me, would keep it fresh. Mm-hmm. You know, you're managing your team over a few seasons, but you're only playing a handful of games when you really have the hankering. I don't see how that would be a fail. I think that would be cool. And with MMOs, I always feel like the more options players have, the better the player base responds to it.
If they only went one direction, would you have a preference?
If they only went one direction, I would prefer to play directly because I tend personally to lose interest in stuff. If it's just, you know, manage your team, you're just basically looking at menus and placing your bets and doing your moves every week, and then you're doing nothing for the next week, that to me would be way less engaging.
You're not a fan of those sports simulators?
You know, I'm personally typically not, actually. I'm surprised about that. I enjoy sports games. I don't enjoy sports management sims that much. What about you, Slaggy?
I mean, I love the idea of being able to go around and recruit hotties for my team.
Of course you do.
Wasn't there a Mario Tennis game that had RPG elements?
Quite a few of them, yes. We've talked about that here on this show.
Those were the ones by Camelot still, right?
Correct.
I know that there was Mario Hoops, one of them, that Square was involved, so I wasn't sure if that also
had... Yeah, that was 3-on-3.
I wasn't sure if that had any sort of RPG elements, so it'd be interesting...
Yeah, I don't think Mario Hoops 3-on-3 had RPG elements. That's not my recollection.
It would be interesting...
I mean, other than literally having characters from the Final Fantasy series, which could be called RPG elements.
Yeah. That being said, I could imagine this, it would be interesting, and I know we're talking way too much about Blitzball, so I'm going to keep it short, but, you know, there's the idea of you having your own team of NPCs that you're playing against other NPCs, or, like I could play against your team, or you could create a team, and we could be, like, a PvP battleground, almost. I mean, is there PvP in 14?
There are some PvP activities, but as far as I know, there's no just straight up like open world PvP or whatever.
I mean, this would be a cool way to introduce like a PvP sort of thing, and then, you know, you could have special PvP currency that would or even just like a Blitzball currency, kind of the way that Blitzsaucer.
The fewer currencies,
I guess that's
the
true.
The better. Like, let's not water it down. To me, I mean, why not have it be a part of Golden Saucer and just have it be another thing that you can make Golden Saucer currency through?
Ooh, yeah.
Maybe, you know, if they do seasons, at the end of every season, you can get, like, a golden trophy Blitzball version of your weapon or whatever.
For your free company house.
Oh, snap. That would be a good call, too, yeah. But to me...
Call us, Yoshi P.
Yeah, seriously. Anyway, we should move on. We have a lot of ground to cover, but actually surprisingly excited for the idea of Blitzball in 14.
Right?
I obviously haven't played much 14 in the last year or so. That's actually going to be remedied this week. I resubbed to 14 on Friday, and I intend on digging into it finally after wanting to all weekend. I'm going to dig into it tonight.
Excellent.
Heat willing. Because right? It is more than 100 degrees in my apartment right now, okay?
Ugh, yeah. This next one is kind of would be under the so controversial manner. This involves a popular streamer. Her stream name, I'm only familiar with her now after this, incident. So I might be saying it wrong. Laura Lania or Laura Lania. I'm not really sure the pronunciation. So basically, she was down there for E3, went to the Twitch party, was posting about having fun with her Twitch buddies, and then her social media went dark after going to the Twitch party. And so one of her friends just said, hey, you know, our friend didn't return to the hotel, can you help out? It ended up, you know, that they filed a missing persons report. Even people like Twitch and IGN spread the word. Basically what happens is that she basically just needed some downtime, went up to some of the local casinos in LA, played some video poker, and, you know, so when she came back, said, oh my god, I, you know, didn't realize, you know, that it was gonna, like, you know, be this huge of a thing, I'm sorry to make people worry. The controversial part is that people, like, this, while this was all building up, Reddit was having conspiracy theories and stuff, and like, people on social media were basically like, oh, well, you were basically cheating on your boyfriend or husband. I'm not sure of her, you know, relationship status, but, you know, you were cheating, you were being, you know.
Real talk, I don't care about any of that stuff, and I think we've even talked already maybe a little too much about that aspect of it here. For me, the big news is, you know, the community really banded together, got a hold of her. She is okay. I know that
right.
I had been retweeting things about, you know, worried about her, people even people I know IRL who also know her and were trying to find her, they were all very concerned. I really don't give two shits about the drama of it. I don't care about people's personal life. We are not fucking Gamergate. We're not going to patrol people's relationships so-and-so did X, Y, and Z.
And I didn't mean it
none
in that,
of that
way at all.
Of course you didn't. But I don't want anyone to possibly consider for even a moment that that's the tip we're on.
I mean,
just happy to report she is okay. She is going to be fine. And if you have beef with her otherwise, you know, that's on you and that's between you and
yeah,
she.
Yeah, and I just hope that she continues to stream because, you know, she seems to be a well-liked streamer and upon all of this was considering quitting, so hopefully she doesn't give up. And people who are being gross, stop being gross and, you know, acting like you have the right to tell this person how to live their life.
Right on.
In some lighter news, Atari is apparently trying to enter the home console business again with a device called the Atari Box. We don't know anything else about it.
I will say, if they're literally calling it the Atari Box, I assume it's just gonna be a
like
little
a retro thing.
Yeah, that, you know, maybe we'll just have like every officially licensed Atari game on it. Other, obviously, I would expect than like the movie licensed stuff like E.T. or what have you.
Well,
but we're better off without anyway.
Right? Would, if that's what an Atari Box is, would you get an Atari Box?
I don't see why not. I mean, I like classic games. I like playing classic games. I would be fine with it.
It'd be cute if it could be one of those ones that could actually play the original cartridges, too.
Yeah, yeah. There's a new line of Genesis/Mega Drive consoles coming out. They have USB, or USB. They finally have HDMI support. And apparently improved support for cartridges. So some of those weirder cartridges apparently will be now supported. So, hey,
hopefully
good time
the emulation
to be in that space.
Is better with that, because I know that with these sorts of things, emulation is an issue. And I mean, there's been little Atari retro things, like plug-and-play things, right? Like,
Of course. In fact, I have one in this room somewhere.
But I mean, you know, maybe if it's in the hands, although Atari is not the Atari that we knew, but still, you know, it'll be interesting to see, but kind of also LOL, Atari in 2017.
Pretty much. Let's see. We also have word here.
Oh, yeah. So this is a really cool article. This would kind of be like one of our Smash hits. And appropriately, it's about Smash. It's from the Compete sub-blog of Kotaku, which looks at esports and competitive gaming. And this is called The 15-Year-Old Smash Pro Who Finds Confidence in Dancing Like Bayonetta. It's about the Smash player Captain Zack, who is a Bayonetta main and kind of, you know, starting to become a known name in the Smash competitive community. And a lot of people are just like, you know, wow, you know, he's a 15-year-old. He's really good. And it just is a really cool profile of, you know, about how he's kind of become involved in the scene and, you know, kind of the salt that people have for Bayonetta, thinking that, you know, she was overpowered or whatever. And kind of just the way about when, you know, he's competing, he like does Bayonetta dances as taunts, and I'm just like, yes, live your life, Captain Zack. I have, you know, like, I had not been familiar with him before this, but I'm definitely going to be following his exploits. Not exploits, but, you know, his, I'm going to be following him from now on. And
exploits, both in terms of his adventures and the ways in which he uses Bayonetta in Smash.
Well said.
So we also have a little bit more of a serious story here. This is actually being published via the Asian Review on the Nikkei. This is obviously like a very well-respected and reputable news source. And they basically published what can almost only be described as a massive hit piece on Konami.
Yep.
It's pretty wild. It's basically about how ex-Konami employees are being deeply mistreated by the company even now, via some almost Yakuza-style relationships and exploitation of relationships. People who have previously worked at Konami are finding themselves unable to find jobs and in some cases even like health coverage.
And sometimes these jobs have nothing to do with the gaming community.
But because people know people and, you know, people are sometimes connected to, for example, the head of Konami, Just having experience at Konami on your resume can end up blacklisting you in Japan right now. It's actually a pretty big issue. It's some really scary stuff. And even though I know I was just recently praising Konami for coming back to the video game fold, turning out an amazing effort with Super Bomberman R, I am now back to hashtag fuck Konami.
Yeah,
will not be supporting Konami, not even if they do a Super Castlevania R or what have you. This is some fucking bullshit. It is inhumane. And if there were any goddamn justice in the world, Konami would be facing serious legal and social repercussions for these actions.
Yeah, the corporate culture at Konami is
fucked.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about, you know, how people have been demoted to janitors and, you know, no disrespect to people who are in the janitorial services, but, you know, people being demoted basically, you know, as punishment.
Well, that's the thing is I have full respect for people who do those jobs. I don't know that I could. So the idea that it's like, oh, you're being punished, you're doing this job now, fuck you on every level. On every level. And I'm not a big fan of cursing as much as I have in the last 60 seconds, but I can think of no other way to communicate and express my outrage at this. It is nonsense, and we must, as a community, band together and punish Konami for this. Like,
yep.
This is serious.
Completely uncalled for.
We also have a little bit of an update here from Nintendo, courtesy of Reggie Fiume, who notes, you know, that Nintendo is considering more Wii U games for Switch, but they are against straight ports. So, you know, they want to see a little less of, you know, a straight up port, more things like Pokken Tournament Deluxe or Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, where, you know, we have additional fighters or additional tracks and modes.
And that's how I would want it, honestly.
And that is how I would want it as well. So I'm excited for that. You know, he also made some notes here about how they are, you know, constantly evaluating what IP they serve. But that sort of ties into a little bit of a spoiler for the rest of the episode, so we'll get to it when we get to it.
Yeah.
We have one more thing here, Saigi. You want to take it?
Yeah, this would be another example of like a smash hit. This is the real story behind Xenogears Unfinished Disc 2. This comes from Jason Schrader.
It does.
I can never say his name right, but over at Kotaku, you know, who during E3 talked to Tetsuya Takahashi-san about like what was the deal with Disc 2 of Xenogears. For those who aren't familiar with Xenogears, basically Disc 2 is basically the two main characters talking about the game's climax in a dark room, which, you know, at the time was very like, what is this? I mean, I think it's kind of fitting with the Xenogears, just the, you know, idea, like just Xenogears itself. But anyway, basically, there's never really been a clear answer. So Jason Schreier took the opportunity and said, you know, so what was the deal? And Takahashi-san basically said that, you know, the staff was pretty much all new and young staff members, and Square at the time was like, you know, the project needs to be done in 2 years. It'll be released after 2 years. They were, you know, trying to mentor these new employees and, you know, teach them things like the, you know, tech that they were using for like 3D was new. And so basically the choices were either to end it at disc one and not be able to have the full story told, or do disc two the way that they did and be able to tell the story. And so that's how Xenogears ended up being the way it did. And I really love that, you know, Kotaku took the time to, you know, ask this question that's basically been gaming urban legend for the past 20 years, you know, when other news sources would just be like, oh, typical interview question. So well done, Kotaku.
Indeed. All right. Well, all that having been said, let's get down to this discussion. And first off, we are going to talk here about Microsoft. Microsoft's press event was, of course, last Sunday, June 11th. And they started off by talking about the reveal of Project Scorpio, or more appropriately, the reveal of the final retail version of what used to be called Project Scorpio. This is the Xbox One X. It's going to be launching November 7th. It's going to have a price point at release of $499.
And it'll come in an Xbox One X box.
It will come in one Xbox One Xbox.
Indeed.
And the thing is, this, you know, is being hyped by Microsoft as the world's most powerful console. It has, you know, crazy, or I don't want to say crazy, but it has a really ridiculous GPU, 12 gigs of GDDR5 memory for that GPU, ridiculous memory bandwidth. This really is going to be a 4K games playing console, which I think a lot of us had previously thought, you know, we wouldn't see for a few years yet. But, you know, it's literally going to have a liquid cooling system inside of it. Like, this thing is a serious piece of hardware. You know, one of the things when a new console gets released is the PC community is always, you know, trying to, at that same price point, make a PC that would have, like, that same performance for the same price or less. No one has been able to crack that for the Xbox One X yet.
I mean,
this thing really is by far ahead of the curve.
I just paid about $700 to $800 for my box, and it's definitely not as powerful as an Xbox One X will be, from what I can tell.
Like, this is really gonna be a powerful console. It's almost a little sad that it's just an Xbox One, that it's just playing Xbox One games, because if it could really be designed to, like, play its own games that were programmed for it to really take advantage of it without having to cater to weaker hardware, that would actually put, for me, Microsoft in a box where they're offering something really special
and unique. Xbox One Xbox.
The problem for me right now is, and I'm not entirely sold on the Xbox One X, just because all it's really going to be doing is playing games I could already play on my Xbox One or even PC, just prettier.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that's enough for me. What about you, Saigi? How do you feel about the Xbox One X?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like it could have been a new console, but they didn't want to abandon the Xbox One too early. But, I mean, the thing is that the Xbox One is not that much different in age from the Wii U. So, you know, and Nintendo went ahead and made the jump to a new console. So, you know, I'm impressed by what it's capable of. I do not think the price point is ridiculous considering the power it has in it. But I also agree with what you're saying about it being kind of hindered by their desire to not have it have exclusive games. And I almost wonder if that's going to change. I mean, we have, you know, the new 3DS, which has certain games that, you know, can only be played on it. So I'm wondering if we're going to see a little bit of a change in, you know, approach.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as it stands now, it does put them in a weird spot, because if they were to do an Xbox 2, like, I'm not sure how they'd be able to outcompete with the Xbox One X for a few years. Unless someday they do an Xbox 2 and the Xbox One X is like, well, you can still play Xbox 2 games on that. They just won't look as good because this is 5 years in the future.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of an interesting precedent that they're setting. And I mean, I've seen a lot of people saying, you know, well, it's smaller but more expensive, and people might look at the Xbox One S and think, like, oh, well, that's a better deal and it's bigger, you know. I'm not saying, like, you know, that as to be insulting, but, you know, people who are not as, you know, closely following the console war, so to speak, who are like, oh, which one did little Timmy want on his Christmas list, the Xbox One X or the Xbox One S?
Yeah, there is definitely a potential for market, you know, confusion and what have you, brand confusion, I guess you would say. I'm not necessarily the person to speak to that, though, because I do know what we're talking about here.
Right. But to keep things moving,
we also have word of Forza Motorsport 7. It will be available for Xbox One through Xbox One X. It will be also on Windows 10. It's going to be launching October 3rd, and it's sort of being positioned as, like, a showpiece title for the Xbox One X.
I mean, aren't Forza games always kind of showpieces for Xbox?
Oh, well, for sure.
I mean, those games are gorgeous, usually.
Yeah, they are. And this one is no exception. It really does look like the best one yet. I enjoy the Forza games. I'll probably pick this one up. What did you think?
I think it looked really impressive. But again, you know, this was one of many titles that they talked about that you can also play on Windows 10. So I'm like, you know, am I going to play it on my Xbox One, or am I going to play it on my Windows PC that I just built that is more powerful than an Xbox One, but not as powerful as an Xbox One X? And I mean, you kind of have your answer there, I think.
Yep. We also have word of the announcement of Metro Exodus. This is, of course, a new iteration in the wildly popular Metro series. I know a lot of people are very excited about this one. I'll definitely be digging into it. It's going to be releasing on the Xbox Xbox One, PC, and PS4. And, you know, that has to be noted. A lot of the games that we saw at the Microsoft press event are actually multi-platform games, and not even necessarily games that have anything exclusive on the Xbox platforms.
Yeah.
Which I thought was an interesting angle.
Timed exclusives, maybe, but...
Yeah, but it's not like a Microsoft or a Sony situation like with Destiny, where it has, like, exclusive content in-game.
Right.
So we got announcement of Exodus. I will be picking it up. I think it looks really good. What about you?
It looks good, but, you know, with so many games, so many games coming out, you know, we'll see. But again, Xbox One, PC, PS4 for a show that was designed, or, you know, that they were trying to spotlight the Xbox One X, there certainly was a lot of stuff that you could play elsewhere. Again, that's kind of where I'm at again, like with Forza.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, let's see. We also got a really cool trailer for the upcoming Assassin's Creed Origins.
Finally
nice
official.
To have it officially announced. You know, we've been getting leaked stuff for this on this game for the last 2 years.
And Ubi's like, nope, denying it. Right. F you, Kotaku.
But we finally have official word coming to the usual platforms you would expect. Not Switch, though, irritatingly.
Yeah.
Either way, I might pick it up. It's kind of tricky for me because I would really love to get into it. I love that it's like an Egyptian-based game. I'm a big fan of the Assassin's Creed series, as we've talked about here. But as I've also talked about here, I don't have a lot of console gaming time in my week. It's been really great to have the Switch because it frees up so much time for me to game that I previously couldn't do meaningful gaming in. The problem is now when a bigger game like this comes out that is... So they would take a lot of time. If there's no Switch version, it's like, well, I'll just wait and hope maybe it someday comes out to Switch, or I'll wait until it's
like
$20.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I am for Assassin's Creed Origins, even though I think it does look smashing good.
It does look good.
What about you, Saiki?
But I mean, that's more for me, kudos to Ubisoft, not Microsoft or Ubisoft, you know, however you want to say it. But, you know, like, again, I thought that it was a great sneak peek. It looks great. It looks like, you know, that after some rough patches that Assassin's Creed is back on the rise after the past couple releases and this one. But again, I can't really give credit to Microsoft for that. It's like, oh, cool, you were the first one to show it, but yeah.
Well, and this next like four actually are all kind of on those lines too, because we also got the announcement of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, which is going to be releasing on Xbox One first in late 2017. Xbox One is basically going to be the first console version of the game, but it won't be full-on exclusive, just timed. Obviously, it's a port of the wildly popular indie PC game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really cool game. I love watching people play it on streams. When I get around to building a new computer, I will probably play it a little bit and stream it.
Yeah, I have to say that...
As it stands today, I mean, okay, exclusive on Xbox platform for a little while, that's cute, but it's not a huge selling point for me. I would definitely just be getting this on PC. Right. What were you saying, Slaggy?
I do have to say my only experience watching it on stream, it was either a very early build of it or just that the streamer is maybe like running it with lower settings. I did have to say, so like, seeing it and seeing some of the animations kind of being a little wonky on the PC stream that I had seen of it, I was like, oh, wow, this is the same game. Like, that actually looks like it's been really polished a lot. So, I mean, it looked impressive, but presumably it'll be able to do that on PC too.
Yeah, I mean, it really... Again, you know, when someone's playing it on PC, it's all just going to be dictated by what their settings are, you know?
Right.
And if they're a streamer and they're streaming something like that, they probably have their settings cranked down so that the game performs better and they can play better in the first place.
Right.
I mean, who wouldn't take playability over graphics? Don't answer that. So we also got the announcement of a game that we've had some rumors and leaks for, a really exciting one here. This is a console fighting game based on the Dragon Ball IP made by Arc System Works using the Guilty Gear Xrd game engine. If you haven't had an inappropriate moment in your pants, which, you know, I only say because I certainly did, this is basically like watching pornography for me.
No, it's so
I am
gorgeous.
So into this. This game looks gorgeous.
It looks obviously, like watching a fight in Dragon Ball Super.
Dude, right? And obviously, Arc System Works makes amazingly designed games. I'm so into this. I am beyond sold. And it is going to be on PC, Xbox, PS4.
Yep.
And just today, Namco Bandai said, you know, there's literally no reason this can't be on Switch.
Yes.
It's just not planned at this time, so they want to see fan support if people would buy this on the Switch.
Oh,
so
hell yes.
Start tweeting at Namco Bandai.
This is Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Dragon Ball Fighter with a Z.
Fighter Z.
And it looks superb. I think it's clear I'll be buying it probably on PS4. And then if it gets a Switch release, I will double dip day one. I don't care.
Yeah, this looks amazing.
Looks so good. We also got word that Black Desert will be releasing to Xbox One. This is, of course, the PC MMO, I believe.
Yeah, and it's a... this is the one I believe that's really well known for its robust character creation system.
Excellent. Oh, yes. It's Which means that I would spend like a week... sandbox-oriented MMO.
I would be spending a week on character creation the way that I am with character creation.
You manage to spend a long time on character creation, even in games like Monster Hunter. So, yeah, you would find a way.
Even in games like Karaoke Revolution.
So, we let's see. We also got here the announcement of Last Light. This is a game that actually looked really cool for a minute. It looks like it was sort of in the line of like the old like flashback or out of this world type games.
Is it Last Light or Last Night?
Last Night, sorry. The problem, unfortunately, is that the people making the game are Gamergate supporters, and not just Gamergate supporters, but active Gamergaters.
So,
and the game, at least in its earliest stages, was literally about a world where everyone is paid equally and all women are treated equally to males and everything falls apart.
And it's like dystopia.
So I can't.
It's almost like
this.
The anti-read-only memories or something. Apparently the main guy behind it did backtrack and say, oh, I no longer, you know, support those views, but still the initial hype around this has definitely been tainted by the associations with that. And isn't this the one where Notch ended up calling somebody a very derogatory word over their reactions to this?
Yorp.
Yep.
Thanks, Notch. So, we also had word of Code Vein. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about Code Vein here on the show. This is the God Eater team's new game. It's kind of being implied that it's kind of like an anime Souls game. Very exciting stuff. Is going to be releasing on Xbox One, PS4, and PC. It looks good, but we still haven't seen much gameplay.
Yeah, that's all I would have to say about it, really.
Let's see. We also got some new footage of Sea of Thieves.
Which is cute.
I have some concerns, but
more on
all,
that with Ubisoft, honestly.
Right. All in all, I am excited for it. Like, I want to see how it turns out. We also got the formal announcement of Life is Strange Before the Storm. This is going to be a sequel/prequel to the first game. Very excited about that. It will be episodic, and the first episode will be releasing on August 31st.
I'm very excited, but again, this has nothing to do with Microsoft except that they showed it. What's notable is that, from what I have read, this is not Life is Strange 2. That is still coming at a later time.
That is correct.
Which I am just totally excited for. This will be more about Chloe and Rachel and their kind of adventures. So I'm just like, I'm totally excited. Even if it is basically a walking simulator, I am so invested in that story and that world. So even if it doesn't have timey twisty stuff, I don't care.
Crackdown 3 has finally been dated. That'll be releasing on Xbox One and Windows 10 on November 7th. The game clearly has a fantastic sense of humor. Terry Crews is involved and will be a playable character in the game. Exciting stuff. The game looks a little jank, but I'm a big fan of the Crackdown series. As long as it has that trademark gameplay, I'm definitely excited for it.
Crackdown can afford to be a little jank.
We also got word that original Xbox games are coming to the Xbox One backward compatibility platform.
Disc and digital, right?
Disc and digital.
That's huge.
That is gigantic. There has been some indication that some of those original games will have their Xbox Live functionality restored. So people are just thirsting for more information on this. And the Xbox One X will apparently be emulating these things at some ridiculous frame rate. Resolution. I don't know if it'll be full 4K, but it will definitely be more than 1080p.
Wow.
Yeah, so...
This was the big selling point for me.
I think it was a big selling point for a lot of people. And, you know, if some of the weirder games get support stuff like Otogi, I will be over the moon.
See, I'm just like...
One of the games that was spotlighted, though, was Crimson Skies, which I've been a big fan of. I believe I've talked on this show
about how
I'd like to see it remade at some point. But I'll take backwards compatibility. That's a fine starting point for me.
This basically means I don't have to even worry about my Xbox 360 anymore.
Right? Like, get me some Ninja Gaiden Black. Get me... some...
I'm like...
like Mech Warrior Battletech.
I'm like, time to dig out all those old Karaoke Revolution discs that we used to play like 10 plus years ago.
I doubt they'll be supported, but dude, please.
Fingers crossed.
Please support it.
So we can be like... sending all those Ashley Simpson bops.
Absolutely. So that's about it. We also had the announcement of Ori and the Will of the Wisps, or Will of the Wisps. I always struggle when I say that. This will be, of course, Xbox One, Windows 10. This game has a huge, very dedicated and devoted fandom. I think it's cool. I'm excited
for
it. What do you think?
Looks beautiful. I still need to play the original Ori, though, so I should do that.
Excellent, excellent. So overall, what in terms of letter grade, what would you give the Microsoft conference?
So my big problem with the Microsoft conference is that so much of it was not Microsoft exclusive. There was very little first or second party stuff really shown. Very little that was console exclusive. So if I'm being generous, C+, largely because, you know, they won't get a failing grade or anything from me, but the Xbox One X does look impressive, even if I do not plan at all on picking it up anytime soon, and the backwards compatibility is huge. It was also, you know, some great games were shown, but I think this showing was really harmed by a very strong lack of exclusive content and first-party content. It's like the anti-Wii U situation.
I think I'm going to give it like a B-, and that's because I actually, if these were all if these were all Microsoft exclusive games, this would have been like
huge
show of the year, like super impressed, can't wait for all these games on my Xbox. But it was a little, for me, it was a little weakened by the fact that none of this made me feel better about my own Xbox ownership.
Right? Like, cool, I can't wait to play this on PC or PS4.
Right? The backwards compatibility stuff for original Xbox, that is solid for me. That is golden. Everything else, I'm like, well, I'm excited to be seeing this trailer, but I'm not even going to buy it on this platform. I'm going to buy it on PS4 or PC. So I don't know. I feel bad because it was probably technically a good show, just did nothing for me to make me excited to be an Xbox owner. And that is a part of what I want out of these conferences. I want a reason to be excited for my platform ownership in the coming year. And I did not get that here at all. Let's talk now about Sony. Sony's press event, of course, was on Monday the 12th at their usual time slot of 6 p.m. Pacific. And we started off with the announcement of Knack 2's release date. That's going to be September 5th, 2017.
Nobody asked for that.
Yeah, I didn't ask for this. We also got word that Coco Bandicoot will be fully playable in the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy.
Cool.
We then started to get into some of the more fire announcements. Undertale, of course, is coming to PlayStation 4 and PlayStation Vita. What are your take on that, Slaggy?
I liked Undertale a lot, so I mean, I'd like a Switch announcement, but hey, you know, these great indies getting more support and a bigger audience, I'm all here for. But, you know, I mean, like, I have it on PC. I don't really see the need to, in this case, I liked Undertale a lot, but I mean, I don't think I need to double dip.
Yeah, I would largely agree with that statement, unfortunately.
I mean, the irony is, though, I would double dip on Switch.
Yeah, well, because that would also bring portability into the equation, which is a genuinely new feature that you can be excited about. That, for me, is actually one of the big talking points here on the whole Switch thing, not to get too far afield. But even when a game gets a one-to-one port or even a slight down port to Switch, that new feature set of being portable is more valuable than any kind of, you know, new level or any kind of prettier graphics and increased effect. None of that means shit if I can't find the time to play your game. So portable for me is the bullet point that is going to go further than anything these days. So I would absolutely buy Undertale on Switch, probably not going to buy it on PS4, but I think it's cool it exists. If I still took my Vita with me places I go, I would buy the Vita version maybe, but as it is, I don't take my Vita anywhere because I haven't bought a Vita game in like 6 months.
You don't want to be seen with it in public. public, similar to me.
I don't mind that. I mean, I mind being seen with you in public, but I wouldn't mind being seen with my Vita in public. I just, that thing probably has a literal layer of dust on it at this point.
I know that when Game Buoy superfan Crystal listens to this, she's going to message me being like, I'm going to smack that boy.
Yeah, that's going to happen. Well, anyway, we still have miles to go, and we're running low on time, so let's move this forward.
Yeah.
We also got a new trailer for Uncharted Lost Legacy. I have seen this referenced as Uncharted Girls Night Out.
Yes!
Which, as long as it's being said in, like, a celebratory, like, empowering way, fuck yeah. I'm not a big Uncharted fan, but I'll still probably check this out.
Yeah.
Looks good. We also got the announcement of an expansion, possibly a standalone expansion, to Horizon Zero Dawn. This is Frozen Wilds. I thought it looked great. I'm really excited to play it. Horizon Zero Dawn is a smashing good game. What did you think of that one, Slaggy?
Yeah, it looks good. I'm looking forward to getting around to Horizon Zero Dawn this summer, and we'll look forward to Frozen Wilds.
Excellent. We also got the controversial announcement of Monster Hunter World coming to PlayStation 4. Capcom has reiterated that Monster Hunter World will also be coming to Xbox One and PC platforms later this year. Part of why this is so controversial, though, is Capcom also stated that although Monster Hunter Double Cross has been announced in Japan for Switch, they have not announced any plans to localize that product at all. And Monster Hunter World will be taking the Monster Hunter formula and shaking it up, in addition to being on a non-portable platform. So the Monster Hunter fandom right now is split between two different groups, one of which, of course, wants Monster Hunter World to do amazing. Capcom has noted that, you know, internally, it was at one point being considered as Monster Hunter 5. It is being viewed as, like, the next mainline game. So, you know, there's a lot of people who are excited for that. I want to be one of them, but the problem is, for me, at least, Monster Hunter is a portable game. It's a game I play with friends portably. I have never played Monster Hunter online, and I don't really want to. Let me rephrase that. I used to play Monster Hunter online in the PS2 era, and when Monster Hunter games started being on portable platforms, PSP in particular, I started playing there and playing with friends IRL, and then once the series got its online multiplayer back, I celebrated it for people who want and need that. Options are important and cool, but for me, I specifically like playing in the same room as my friends. I like that it was a local multiplayer option, and that's what I want from Monster Hunter moving forward. The reason why this is so controversial and why so many of us on the other side of the aisle are so upset about it is, like, the product for us to continue enjoying the Monster Hunter that we want to continue enjoying and continue paying for, let's be clear, is literally going to exist and just not exist in our country. That's stupid. This is 2017. So a lot of us have gone from, like, I want to support World even if it's not the product I want, just because we love Monhunt so much. But now, with Capcom making this boneheaded move not to bring Double X or Double Cross to us, a lot of us are like, well, if I'm not going to get the product I do want, why the hell should I support the one I don't? So it's a really tricky time to be a Monhunt fan right now.
Yeah. It's just weird to see this when it's become so much a portable game.
Yeah,
its
and hey, you know,
has
if,
really become shaped around that.
If you feel that you need to put it on a big boy console in order to grow the game design and everything, honestly, go for it. I support that. I want as many Monhunt games as possible. I want them all to be successful. I want Monhunt to be worldwide a gigantic, enormous brand. But I also want to play the Monster Hunter games that I want to play. Like, I don't really want to play this other game that also has, like, some more, like, kind of casualized elements, some, like, open world game design choices. What the direction they're going to for Monster Hunter World, for me, isn't really my ideal direction for a Monster Hunter game to go, which is why having Double Cross as an option for me would be very beneficial. As it stands, this just sort of left a sour taste in my mouth.
Yeah, I don't have much of an interest in it. When I had Monster Hunter, was it 3 for 3DS and Wii U?
That was 3 Ultimate, yeah.
I only ended up playing it on the 3DS because I didn't find it as fun playing on the Wii U.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, in happier news, we also got the surprise announcement of a Shadow of Colossus remake. And this is not just a remaster, this is a full remake. It is being designed to hew very close to the original, but will have new features, including a new control scheme.
Interesting.
Hardcore fans of the game, of course, are a little concerned. You change the control scheme, it could change the experience. But if nothing else, it looks like the prettiest version of this game imaginable.
Right.
On one hand, this game just got an HD remaster on PS3 just a couple of years ago. On the other, it is a landmark, incredible masterpiece, and I'm excited to revisit it. What about you, Psyche?
Yeah, kind of like, was this really needed? But it looks really pretty.
Yeah, and this one will be launching in 2018. We also got a look at the story mode in Marvel vs. Capcom Infinite, as well as a demo that released that same day for download by everyone on PS4. So you could check that out now. It might even be available on Xbox One as well at this point. Unfortunately, fan response was very critical. A lot
game
of people concerned that the game looks very ugly. The gameplay has been considerably toned down. For me, it's a pretty big negative. I don't mind that the game's ugly that much. For me, the game design was toned down so much that you can effectively just do combos by pressing one button repeatedly, and the game will, like, completely auto-combo you all the way. Not really the kind of thing I'm looking for, but I've also been playing Capcom Fighters for 20-plus years. For people who don't have that experience, I've seen a lot of positive attention online, and I think that's a good thing. It might actually be a good thing that this game is being designed this way, even if it's not for me anymore. What do you think, Slaggy?
Yeah, it looks like kind of a mess, honestly.
Yeah, well, I get that. We also got the announcement of Monster of the Deep. This is a Final Fantasy 15 fishing PSVR experience. Hey, I know a lot of Japanese gamers are super stoked about
this.
Oh,
that's true. Fishing games are huge in Japan.
We also have God of War got a new trailer. We'll be releasing in early 2018.
Happy
I think
Father's
it looks
Day.
Pretty good. We got a new trailer for Detroit Become Human. It's definitely starting to come together. I'm really excited for what that game's going to have to say, but I'm not sure when it's releasing.
Yeah.
We also have another trailer for Days Gone. Was a good trailer. Still not
still
quite
not my kind of game,
my
really.
My kind of game, but showed a little more of like the open world survival type stuff, rather than being like a strict linear progression in the style of like an Uncharted or something.
It's cool.
Yeah. And I think the last thing we saw in that show was the Spider-Man trailer, right?
Yeah.
Which had a fantastic Miles Morales tease at the end. A lot of people very excited about that. The game looks very good.
Looks a lot of fun.
Will be another 2018 release, though. I've seen a lot of criticism online, you know. We saw very little out of Sony for 2017, which is a little problematic, you know. It's always good to hear about what games we'll be playing next year, but it's also nice to know what games we'll be playing this year. And I did want to note, after their show, we also got the announcement of Loco Roco 2 Remastered for
so
PS4.
Cute.
Looking great. Looks like another really fantastic one of those Vita/PSP ports on PS4. All said and told, I think Sony had a fairly strong showing. Lots of exclusive stuff. Makes it easier to be excited about being a PS4 owner. What's the verdict, Slaggy?
I'm going to give it a B. And that's because there was a decent amount of stuff there that looked good. Some of it was kind of carryover from last year, and a lot of it's not coming this year. So, you know, that's why I'm just going to say B.
All right. I would probably give it a B+, and solely for the not a lot that's coming this year stuff, I think the games all looked great. I'll play the majority of what we saw, but again, y'all didn't show me anything I'll be playing in the next 6 months.
You know who did show a lot that is coming in the next 6 months?
Well, so I know where you're going with this, but I have a different intro for this. And I want to note, going into this, Nintendo, always the dark horse. I assume that's where you were going with that, Slaggy, is that, you know, Nintendo showed a lot of stuff we'll be playing this year and a little bit of what we'll be playing next year. The thing is, you know, these other press conferences we talked about so far were all like hour plus events. Microsoft might have even been an hour and 90 minutes or 2 hours, but it felt like it went a long time.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's just a read on them unintentionally. But here, going into this event, you know, Nintendo was noted that their event was going to be 25 minutes. People expected the worst. They thought we would see Mario Odyssey and literally nothing else. Instead, we got confirmation of Xenoblade Chronicles 2 coming this holiday.
Looking great.
Worldwide. Looking great. I think the new anime-esque art style looks really good. Personally, not everyone is into it. Tastes are what they are.
Yeah.
We got the announcement of Metroid Prime 4 now in development. We got the announcement of a new core Pokemon game now in development for Nintendo Switch, which, you know, Game Freak has reiterated on, first off, that though the game will take more than another year to launch, Japanese newspaper reports have indicated that that's almost certainly a quarter four 2018 release. So, yeah, take more than a year, but still a next year game, which would be remarkable.
Yeah.
Full-on Pokemon experience, little more than a year away. We got word that Breath of the Wild DLC Pack 1 will be launching June 30th. Mario Odyssey going to be releasing October 27th. We got a lot of footage of it and everything. Learned about the new gameplay mechanic, where Mario can throw his hat, Cappy, at NPCs, enemies. It looks like basically anything in the game, and take control of it and have a whole new set of skills to attack and explore with. This game won so many Game of the Show awards. They had it playable on the show floor. It's apparently amazing.
I cried happy tears.
Yeah, it looks like an incredible experience. We also got the announcement of Rocket League for Switch, and word that it's going to feature cross-network support with Xbox One and PC players. In fact, the only platform it won't have cross-play support from is PS4, and that's because Sony said that they are not going to allow cross-play support because they feel the need to protect their players. I just have to say, like, I'm sorry, what harm are Nintendo console players going to be giving your players? You can just be honest. You're trying to say that you have the highest player base of the consoles, but at this point, that's a technicality that don't mean much. If I'm connecting to Xbox One and PC players, I'm actually going to be looking at a bigger pool on my Switch than I am my PS4, so maybe lose the arrogance, Sony. That's a bad business call on your choice, on your behalf. It's also going to have some cool customization options for your cars that have Nintendo themes. We saw specifically a car that had a Mario cap on it,
right?
And I saw a lot of people commenting like, oh shit, Mario took control of that car. Right?
Which he did, which you can also do in Odyssey. You could take control of a dinosaur and a car and other people.
Right?
And a frog.
We then got the announcement of a new Kirby game. That'll be a 2018 release.
Looks great.
And we got the announcement of a new Yoshi game. Also going to be a 2018 release. Both of those for Switch. So we ended up hearing a lot from Nintendo, both in terms of what we're playing this year and next year.
Yeah, the Yoshi game looks really cute.
And then, to make things crazier, in the Nintendo Treehouse Live events, we got the announcement of Metroid Samus Returns coming to Nintendo 3DS. This is a new 2D Metroid game. It's a remake of the Metroid Return of Samus game on the original Game Boy. We got the announcement of new character free DLC in ARMS coming in July. This is the current boss character, Max Brass. We got the announcement of the upcoming action puzzle game for Nintendo 3DS, Sushi Striker. We got the announcement of Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga Meet Bowser's Minions for the 3DS coming later in 2017, which is a remake of Mario and Luigi Superstar Saga with an entire new campaign added that is apparently nearly as long as the original campaign.
Wow.
But taking place from the perspective of, like, a lone Goomba in Bowser's army.
Aww.
Right? All in all, I gotta say, I felt like Nintendo stole the show. I feel like, and this might have to do part with the media channels I follow, the voices on Twitter I follow, but I feel like Nintendo during the conference had the most positive feedback, the most hype, and I think that positive feedback and hype ran through the entirety of E3. You know, I've been noting for the last few years now, like, I feel like for all the shit Nintendo gets every year when they announce how long their digital event is going to be, they always end up running away with the show, and I feel like this year has been absolutely no exception. I think once again Nintendo killed it. What's your take?
I mean, I have that Nintendo bias, but I mean, everything they showed here is something that I'm looking forward to. You know, I was expecting Odyssey. I was very pleased with what we learned about Odyssey, and the gameplay they showed on the Treehouse looked great. Metroid Prime 4 is huge. Like, you know, I know a lot of people were upset that there was no Mother announcement. The Earthbound fandom still holding out hope there, but
I'm actually still holding out hope there. Reggie earlier this year had said, you know, that he wonders what the Metroid and Mother fans are going to be saying next year. And now we know that that meant there were two Metroid games that he knew about at that point that we didn't.
Right.
And that does lead me to believe that we still have something we're going to hear about Mother in the next year. I do. I really do believe we're going to hear something about Mother.
Could you imagine if they do a Mother's Day stream in 2018?
Oh, that would be incredible.
But the Kirby and Yoshi games were pleasant surprises, too. Definitely confirmation that, I mean, you think about, we have Odyssey, ARMS, Splatoon 2 coming, we had Breath of the Wild, huge launch year for Switch. Next year looks like there's going to be a lot of great games, too. The other thing that a lot of people seem disappointed about was no Smash, but I'm not surprised. Why would they want to take the sale... wind out of the sails for ARMS, which is just coming out. You know, they're really trying to grow ARMS and, you know...
Well, and there's that, and we have Pokken Tournament Deluxe coming, and, you know, they also hosted, you know, esports events for both of those games at E3. Both were phenomenal and really raised my thoughts and expectations for both of these games. I have picked up ARMS now. I've already played it a bit since Friday. Really excited for Pokken Tournament, which is interesting, because on the Wii U it didn't do much for me, but watching, you know, this high-level competitive play really did make me want to give it another go, and I think when it comes out on the Switch, I'll do exactly that.
Excellent.
Nintendo also an A for me. Of the big three, they're the ones I thought most ran away with the show, but we would, of course, be remiss not to talk a little bit about Ubisoft. And of course, you know, from Ubisoft, we saw their new pirate game, which is spinning off of the
Assassin's Creed
pirate combat engine stuff. We got the huge announcement. Of course, unfortunately, it had been leaked so much that we all knew it was coming. But we got the huge announcement of Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle coming August 29th. So we'll be playing that soon.
And that sassy little Rabbid Peach, like, just... everyone, even though we already knew about her, like, everyone was all about her, at least on gay Twitter.
Yeah, right? Like, I'm losing my mind over this game. I don't think I've ever seen public perception on a game switch, no pun intended, so hard as they did on this game. You know, we had previously talked about, like, the leaked, like, internal use assets and, like, on this game. We had talked about how, you know, a lot of people totally dumping on this game. We're trying to remain positive. After the trailer, seeing it in action where it looks almost literally just like a Mario-themed XCOM game.
Right, I've heard that comparison.
I have seen so many people now like, oh my god, I just pre-ordered it. I can't wait to play it. I'm stoked for this game. What about you, Slaggy?
I'm also very excited for it. It's nice to see Ubisoft once again giving some support for Nintendo. I know that, you know, they tried with Zombie U, and then, you know, the Wii U kind of flopped, but, you know... Ubisoft is a good partner for Nintendo, I think. I mean, this just looks like it's the Rabbids and the Rabbids franchise is a good fit for Nintendo. So, definitely looking forward to it.
Excellent. We, of course, got our now annual look at the new South Park game. At some point, we might get to play that.
We get to play with that butthole.
Of course, Just Dance is still coming. But we also got to look at the new Ubisoft Toys to Life game, Starlink Battle Atlas. That's going to be coming in the fall of 2018. Interestingly, you'll be able to play it with or without the toys.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Which makes it, like, a little weird to me. Like, if I can play this without the toys, what's my motive to buy the toys? But it does look like a neat game. I'm interested in learning more about it. Probably the biggest bomb they dropped was the reconfirmation and new trailer of Beyond Good and Evil 2. Of course, people were screaming.
Michelle Ancel was crying,
literally
on stage.
That which had actually, for me, was a really powerful moment.
Right. I mean, like, I don't really have a connection to Beyond Good and Evil. Like, I know it's really a well-loved game, but seeing him, like, tear up at it, like, I was getting a little weepy. I was like, I don't even know this game, really, and just seeing how strongly it was received, like, that was, it was really heartwarming.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Overall, what would you rate this press event?
You know, the funny thing is that Ubi usually does one of the poorest ones for me. I would say A-B+, right on that range. I don't think it was definitely the home run that Nintendo was, but I thought Ubi had a lot of great stuff to show and a lot of things that people are really excited about.
Like, yeah.
I thought they had a really good showing this year. So
yeah, I agree.
I would say A-.
I would put them in the B+, A- range as well. I was really worried and trepidatious going into this. You know, they did not have their usual speaker up, whom obviously is a personality that we love here.
Right. Aisha Tyler.
Exactly. I think she's fantastic. And
people were worried
about
that. Yeah.
I was very concerned, but somehow Ubi still totally pulled it out. Let's talk about Bethesda. Bethesda had a handful of announcements that at their event that I thought were pretty good.
Yeah.
We got the standalone expansion to Dishonored 2. This is Death Outsider, or Death to the Outsider, or Death of the Outsider. Some random words thrown together. That'll be releasing on PS4, Xbox One, and PC. I thought it looked great. I love the Dishonored games. I can't wait to play that one. We got the announcement of Wolfenstein 2, New Colossus, which is about current politics in America, basically.
Right.
TLDR, like the alt-right type Nazis have taken over America, and you're just gonna kill as many of them as indiscriminately as possible.
Between this and Far Cry 5, watch out.
Right. We finally got the official announcement of Evil Within 2 for Xbox One, PS4, and PC. I think it looks fantastic. I cannot wait to play. I really like the first Evil Within, and this new one looks like a home run to me. What did you think?
I mean, the Evil Within games are not for me because I'm a wimp, but, you know, great to see another entry in this franchise. Or nice to see it become a franchise at this point, yeah.
Excellent. We also got word that Elder Scrolls Skyrim for Switch will actually have Zelda amiibo support so that you can get Zelda gear in-game.
So for all of the Breath of the Wild Zelda Scrolls Hyrim jokes we made, this is literally going to be Zelda Scrolls Hyrim.
Right? You know, seeing the adventure of Skyrim running around with the Master Sword and, you know, the champion gear and everything,
right,
the tunic and all that. I thought that was really cute. I'm really excited for the Switch port of Skyrim.
Yeah, this is probably for me the most personal highlight just because of the Zelda stuff. I'm easy to please.
We also got the announcements of Fallout 4 for VR and Doom for VR, both announced for PC. Skyrim, although not shown at this event, was also a PS4 VR version was announced, which I thought was cool. All in all, I thought Bethesda had a solid showing. Not quite as much content as I maybe would have liked, but it was good overall, and I would probably give it like a C+, B-. I thought it was a good show. I thought it was themed really cutely with like Bethesda Land is like
and apparently,
a Fallout Disneyland type take on
apparently
the Bethesda properties.
That they, on the show floor, they had a, I think a Fallout diner. I don't know if it was Fallout themed, because again, Bethesda is not a company that I've played a lot of their stuff. But you can get milkshakes is the point I'm making. My thing kind of tying into that is I typically don't play a lot of Bethesda games. And so trying to not let that, you know, affect my grading of it, I would give it a B-. Probably more of a B, though. Like, I think that I would have liked to have seen a little bit more, maybe. But I feel like last year they had so much that was really big that, you know, this year was naturally not going to be as much of a blockbuster for them. So I would say a B-.
Excellent. Well, then let's wrap this up by talking about EA.
Do we have to? Can we just do our what's up now?
All right, so I'm going to keep this short because they basically kept it short. We didn't get to see a whole lot out of EA.
Well, you say they kept it short, but they went on for a while.
I say they kept it short because I'm looking at a list of what was announced.
Yeah, but
in
watching
terms
it
of actually
painful.
Watching it, it was painful. We got the announcement of a new Need for Speed. This is Need for Speed Payback.
Which actually does look really cool.
Looks great. And, you know, I actually like the Need for Speed games a lot, so that's cool. We got the reveal of Anthem, which is the new BioWare IP. That also is looking pretty cool. It looks very much like a Destiny ripoff. I say ripoff, but I mean clone.
Destiny effect.
We got the announcement of Battlefront 2, and we got to watch a lengthy gameplay?
Pretty lengthy.
We got the requisite focus on all of their sports games, including, to be fair, the Switch version of FIFA, which looks like a mostly featured version of the game.
And we were worried about that.
I guess it's not on the Frostbite 8-bit graphics engine. They haven't ported that to Switch yet. A lot of the behind-the-scenes commentary appears to be that they're waiting for a game to be successful on the Switch of theirs before they port that engine. But it's kind of a chicken-and-the-egg thing. Like, if you brought your best games to the Switch, they would sell. And if you bring down ports that are less fully featured, they will probably not sell.
Mm-hmm.
So it's EA being the typical EA.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, their requisite suit of sports games, not quite for me. Didn't love it.
I almost feel like the sports needs to be its separate conference.
I would support that, actually.
You would support that?
And probably the game that I was most excited about for EA, weirdly enough, is their...
Prison Daddies.
Their new Prison Daddies game, A Way Out, which is a split-screen, co-op-only prison break game made by Hazelight, whom you're probably familiar with from their work on Brothers,
Brothers
A Tale of Two Sons,
yeah.
Which is itself a fantastic game. This is basically a game...
So this is Daddies A Tale of Two Studs.
About two guys working together to break out of prison. The whole game is told from the perspective of these two gents, and which one you're playing sort of is which one's story you'll be following more closely. And the whole game is designed around the idea that, like, you will always have multiple objectives, and one of you will have to handle one, and the other will handle the other. And the sort of gameplay variety will come up with, like, which one of the two dudes is handling what, and how that player is handling that situation.
Yeah.
To me, like I was saying earlier when talking about Monster Hunter, this kind of local co-op for me is a huge draw.
Yeah,
so
I'm...
the fact that it's coming on PS4, Xbox One, PC, I will definitely be buying it on one of those platforms. I wish it were coming out on Switch because that's the easiest console for me to do same screen multiplayer on.
Right, it doesn't
on.
Look like it's trying to push any boundaries graphics-wise.
But see our previous statement about EA's support of the Switch.
Right.
Either way, I'm super stoked for this game. I'll definitely
play it. Yeah, it looks really good. I'm looking forward to playing it with you. I call dibs on the guy with the awesome sideburns. You can have Beardy Daddy.
So all that having been said, that's about it for EA's presser. For me, it was probably the weakest of all of them this year. I actually would have rather just seen all of these announcements happening at other people's events.
Pretty much.
For me, this is like D. And not just for the daddies.
Daddy D. Ooh. Yeah, D+.
All right. Well, that about wraps it up for E3. Let me ask you, Slaggy, for you, what was your biggest news story? What was your favorite game? And overall, what did you think?
Oh, boy. I mean, for me, Odyssey hype was really big for me. But, I mean, I would say the biggest news story is probably Metroid Prime 4. I think that even the second runner-up news story would be the Xbox One or the original Xbox backwards compatibility. But, I mean, Metroid Prime 4 was kind of the jaw-drop moment. I saw, people joking about... oh, if, you know, Metroid Prime 4 is announced, I'll buy everyone a pizza. And they're like, what? Really? Because there was something else that got announced that people were like, what? It might have been, I don't even remember what it was. But, that was just kind of like, what? They really announced that? So, Nintendo really stole the show for me. And, I mean, people were like, oh, you're a Nintendo fanboy, but, I mean...
Yes, you are, but things can be two things.
Yes.
All right, and overall, who would you say took the show? Nintendo, is that
Nintendo.
That's your... Okay.
With Ubisoft as a strong second. Surprised to say that.
All right. For me, my biggest news story would probably have to be Monster Hunter World. That's a very personal story for me because I have been a huge supporter of the Monster Hunter series for years. I've imported consoles to play Monster Hunter games. I've imported special edition Monster Hunter consoles.
You have.
To play Monster Hunter games. So to have a new one coming out that might be successful in this country, but at the loss of one that I actively do want to play, is a huge struggle for me. Very conflicted. Ultimately, I still just want Capcom to do well, and I want Monster Hunter to do well, but holy moly, am I upset on some levels. Game of the show, though, would probably have to be Mario Odyssey. I think it looks incredible. I cannot wait to play it. It just looks so much much fun. And the idea that it's going back to a mission structure from Mario 64, where you have an objective, and what that objective is will reflect, like, the current state of the world you're in. And so, like, the later ones will have, like, different world change effects. So, like, the various mishaps that might occur on your earlier adventures will be reflected in your later adventures, like Mario 64. That, to me, is fantastic. I have been craving a return to that kind of level in world design. That I'm going to get it has me so hype. Would definitely have to give the show to Nintendo overall, with the backup to Ubi, surprisingly. And overall, I actually thought this was a really great E3 for Sony and for Nintendo, and even for Microsoft in some ways. I think they're going to get a lot of very positive press on the power of the Xbox One X. I just think it's unfortunate that its showpiece title is going to be a game that I'll be playing before the Xbox One X even releases on an older box. That sucks.
One Xbox box, Xbox box, box?
Something like that. Anyway.
It's getting to me.
It's really hot in the recording studio and ever climbing as we get more animated. Let's wrap this up by talking about what's up.
I said, hey, what's going on?
So for me this week, I have been doing a lot of gaming, excitingly. I finished my Kingdom Hearts 2 run on Kingdom Hearts 1.5 plus 2.5, and I actually started it between last episode and this episode. I don't normally have this much time to play a stationary console, but I was required to get several days of bed rest, and so I had my PS4, and I just dug into Kingdom Hearts 2.
Hey, if you gotta be stuck in bed, at least you're with Mickey and friends.
Pretty much. I've been playing a little bit of ARMS, which I'm excited to get back to. Really impressed so far. I'm very excited about it. I've also been putting some time in on Disgaea 5 on Switch. You know, now that it's released here, a lot of my friends on Twitter and stuff are tweeting about it, and it got me excited and returning to my save game from my Japanese import copy. So I've been loving the heck out of that, too.
Excellent.
Otherwise, dipping my toes a little bit more into Injustice 2. I checked out the Marvel versus Capcom Infinite demo. Cool stuff all around. Slaggy, what about you? Oh, and I resubbed Final Fantasy 14. I just haven't played it yet.
Excellent. I, since last time, have had a chance to play. I played the ARMS test punches. Have not picked up ARMS yet. Definitely found that the motion controls were tricky for me, but standard controller controls I had a lot more success with. I started my Kingdom Hearts 1.5 plus 2.5 remix playthrough, finally. Playing Kingdom Hearts 1 final mix. Finding that, because I got decently far in it 15 plus years ago, whenever that came out. Was it 15 years ago? 2002? Finding that I'm having a rougher time, and like I'm like, I feel like I'm a better gamer now than I was 15 years ago, and I'm like, how did I know where to find all the stuff for the food that you're gathering? How did I know how did I get through all of these little heartless attacks? Like, I got killed by heartless in Traverse Town. I'm embarrassed.
You know, you shouldn't be embarrassed. You shouldn't be embarrassed. It's, it's not harder than the original North American release on the difficulty you're playing it on. It was a little more challenging than the original Japanese release, but that's neither here nor there. One thing you might be experiencing, though, is that, again, you know, there are some physics changes in the jump to 60 frames per second. Most people feel that it's much more responsive that way, but maybe it being a little less responsive was a benefit in your case?
I don't know.
I don't know. I was surprised that you're struggling.
I got through several worlds.
Well,
on the PS2.
What did you take, the shield, the rod, or the sword?
I took the shield.
Did you leave the rod or the sword? Okay, yeah, that's generally what we suggest to people. That's surprising, then.
I just suck.
Maybe just do a little grinding.
Ooh, well, you know, with...
Because you can get those early level ups quick.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you did like 20 minutes of grinding, I bet the whole thing would be done. You'd be clear for the rest of the game.
Probably so. But still, it looks gorgeous. I'm happy to finally be, because I never finished Kingdom Hearts 1, so I'm very excited to progress with that, and then finally play Kingdom Hearts 2, which I know is like your boo, and then all the other ones that are your boos too. The other big one, so it's been really big Square Enix for me, because Final Fantasy 14, I resubbed since the last episode. I can't remember if I had just barely resubbed last time, but anyway, finally got my main class at the time, Summoner 50, was able to do the end of the main initial story quest, but not all the patch content. Then got a little busy with work, took a vacation, but I've come back. I ended up buying the story skip potions because I'm impatient, and it really held me back from playing with you and Sulker and some other folks at the time. So I'm like, I'm just gonna buy it, and then that way I'm free. I also ended up buying a job jump potion because me. So I job jumped Black Mage to 60. Definitely don't regret it, but I've with early access for Stormblood, which has been kind of controversial because of broken quests and stuff, I've spent my time mostly picking up, like, I can finally start doing Dark Knight, which I did the initial quest for, Astrologian, and Red Mage, which is one of the new classes, and jobs. Red Mage so far, really fun, might be my main job. So, you're a fancy pirate fencer who does magics.
That's kind of right up your alley.
Yeah, definitely. So, it's still early access. I'm definitely looking forward to putting in some more time, hopefully tonight, although also very hot.
Yeah, if I can put up with being in front of my gaming PC tonight, I'm going to go get the samurai job and start working on that.
Excellent.
I'm just a little worried because it's so hot here. Like, I kind of want to just sit in front of my little, like, window AC unit and just be cooled. And there's no way I can do that with my PC here.
I don't blame you.
So,
that's what I've been playing. And moving on to our social links, we're going to wrap this up pretty quickly. We said this week we're talking E3. Who were your winners, losers, and what did you love? We had Ken C over on Facebook saying, I loved Moss, the Mouse VR game. Shadow of the Colossus remake and Ori 2. Kind of sad no new Pokemon Switch game was announced in terms of, like, formal announcements. And then going over to Twitter, we were going to catch up on a few tweets in between and then get into the social links. We had posted our News Buddies episode. Your enzyme said exciting. We have a tweet from Soundscape419 saying, love your show. High quality, great chemistry. Always informative, witty humor, relative points on issues, and really fun. Aw, thank you so much. That is very, very high praise. We have Gym Leader Derek saying, listening to Spike Point and Slag Kick Cackle during mic test on GameBuoy.org is everything. I'm glad that you enjoy our silliness.
Indeed.
Your enzyme, following up on a point we made last time about saying, I totally agree, I totally 100% agree with you on the talking animals. It's weird and unnatural. Where animal CGI talking has, like, human movement mouth? No. We also have Boy from 1983 saying, keep up the good works, guy. The good work, guys. Always enjoy listening to your show during my commute to work. Glad we can make that commute fun for you. We have now some E3 stuff. Bron Dwarf saying Samus Returns. ActDef saying Super Mario Odyssey and Kirby.
Yeah.
Your enzyme saying Nintendo could have announced Poop on a Stick as the only other game with Metroid Prime 4, and they still would have won for me. I'm sorry to say that my official Nintendo Switch launch trailer for Poop on a Stick was not ready, but stay tuned. We'll have some updates on the Kickstarter page for that soon.
Are you going to dev that in Unreal 4? Because I need that.
I kind of want to. Unreal 4 is, like, free now, right?
There are, like, free to enter, like, indie options, yeah. I've actually been looking at it for a game design idea I have.
Well, that might be my summer project, Poop on a Stick.
Ah!
you could feel how much poop there is with the HD rumble on the Joy-Con. Anyway, your enzyme saying, now whenever MP4 comes out, I'll finally be buying a Switch. I'm sure it's still 2 to 3 years away, though. Please help me out because... Oh, Metroid Prime 4, duh. I was having a little bit of trouble parsing that for a minute. Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm glad that that's going to be what sells you on the Switch, because I know you were holding off on that, your enzyme.
Yep.
Continuing, Microsoft and Sony's conferences both left me wanting. Anthem was my game of the show. The entire time I was saying, if this game has loot, I'm sold. And then it happened. Yay! Happy emoji.
Yeah, it basically looks like a little bit more of an RPG take on Destiny, and I am extremely here for that.
Yeah. Boy from 1983 also commenting, Microsoft couldn't convince me with Xbox One X. Monster Hunter World has left me shook. Has it left you Baba shook? And I loved everyone freaking out about MP4, Metroid Prime 4. Sky saying, I was surprised to learn I'm really interested in 4K gaming for my PC. Right?
Shame!
did.
Emiru 69 saying, I love Final Fantasy Dissidia. Winners, indies, losers, Capcom, and their Monster Hunter Dumb Gaijin Edition, and third-party games not coming to Switch.
Ooh-wee. Ooh. Took the thoughts right out my brain.
That retro code saying, Nintendo won, Devolver Digital failed utterly, and I love and need Sushi Striker in my life. Overall, successful E3. Also, Plush Trico. The Plush Trico is super cute. We didn't talk about Devolver Digital. They basically, like, Adult Swimmed E3.
Well, they basically do that every year, though.
Yeah. But, I mean, for me, it was kind of like, yeah, that's what they do. JD saying, Nintendo easily won on Tuesday. I'm excited for almost everything they announced. Sad there was no Smash or VC news, though. Yeah, Virtual Console is still something that we're a little bit lacking. But we are hearing about the classic games, that it's no longer going to be one game a month. It'll be more like a Netflix-y sort
and
of thing.
And when you say classic games, you're talking about the games that will be included in the Nintendo Online subscription that we'll be getting more information about later this year.
Yeah, correct. JD continuing, I was all about Life is Strange 2 until I heard about the voice acting union dispute. Beyond Good and Evil 2 is 100 emoji, but will it come to Switch? Yeah, we'll see. And then last, we have some tweets from earlier today from Your Enzyme. First up is Dream Daddy teaser trailer from Your Enzyme saying, yes, please, for realsies, linking us to the Steam page. And then wrapping up with a point on The Last Night, was real disappointed to learn of The Last Night creator's personal opinions towards feminism. The game looks cool, but it's a hard pass. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to you, Captain Spike.
You actually missed one of our feedbacks. We're going to play everyone out there in Internet Radio Land a quick clip.
So I'm going to pass it over.
From our good friend Anthony from the Nintendo Love Fest, who has a couple of messages for us all.
Hi there. I don't know when your big E3 show is going to be, as I know Slaggy is in Disneyland, which I'm uber jealous about. I hope you had a Dole Whip for me. But I wanted to give my thoughts on E3 2017 thus far. At the time of recording this, Nintendo is the only one to have not gone yet, so to speak. It's Anthony here from the Nintendo Love Fest podcast, I probably should say, and obviously Nintendo Love Fest that you always shout out is your podcast about Nintendo specifically, but gaming in general, always with a critical eye and voice, and we'll be doing a sort of Nintendo wrap-up show too. Anyway, on to the conferences. EA. So, in some regards, EA was still the EA Sports power hour, but I like how the rollout of the narrative things to all their sports games is happening. And I have to say that the Battlefield 1 stuff did look mighty impressive. Enough so that I picked up Battlefield 1 on sale on PSN pretty much straight after. Battlefront 2 looked like a step in the right direction for me. But the presenting of a multiplayer match seemed to go on a bit too far and long for my liking. There were some major embarrassing moments as well. I think it would have been better if it was edited and not a live playthrough, because there was talking up some bits, like when Ray appeared, for example, and then suddenly the player got killed straight away. The EA presser also, I think, was notable because it relied most of everything we've seen so far on influencers, which I think a lot of them also did. I've got no issue with that personally, although I have to say there probably wasn't always the most polished presenters. The interesting thing that I've noted is that the mainstream podcasts and news sites are almost like spiteful ex-wives cursing this quite vocally on their podcasts and in their writing. It sounds like they're fighting back at the media being able to communicate with players in a different way. But at the same time, I do recognise that there is some problematic issues in using the influencers, because their code of ethics isn't always their strongest suit. Anyway, in terms of EA conference, there are some other standouts. The Daddy Co-op game, as Slaggy and I are calling it, A Way Out, and Need for Speed Payback looked really good. I wish they would just call Need for Speed Payback Need for Speed Burnout, and just name it what it is. But on the whole, really good show. Obviously, the other interesting thing was Anthem, but more on that in a bit. Overall, if we're giving letter grades that we normally do, B+ from me. Microsoft, I come to the realization after watching the Microsoft conference that they're kind of in the reverse situation that traditionally people see Nintendo in. Whilst Nintendo often lacks their third-party support and have to rely upon its own content, it's clear that Microsoft's failure to invest in its first and second-party development studios has now come home to roost, and they're kind of in the reverse situation where they're really relying upon third parties to put out games for them. There are some things that are legit exciting to me that they showed. Assassin's Creed Origins, Life is Strange Before the Storm, Anthem, Metro Exodus. However, none of these are exclusive, despite Microsoft's fast and loose understanding of the term exclusive at the conference. And in my opinion, these won't have Xbox One X's flying off the shelves, because you can get all of these titles on PC and PlayStation. Also, the Xbox One X, Xbone X, XOX, did seem a nice piece of kit, but it really didn't sell me on the need to upgrade after picking up an Xbox One S last Christmas, and it really not getting an awful lot of playtime. Also, one of the take-homes for me is this was the final sign that EA is coming after Activision in terms of their business model. They've made Battlefield 1 much more attractive, in my opinion, of a shooter to Call of Duty, and their announcement of Anthem is clearly the aim to take out Destiny and kill that too. As a rating, I'd have to give this one a C+. There was some fun stuff, but nothing really that made me want to cheer lead for Microsoft. Bethesda. I really think that Bethesda's announcements could have been doled out between all the other shows. I think they have pulled themselves into a bit of a hole in doing these events. I think they should have been Square Enix and recognised they don't have an awful lot to show this year and gave it a miss this year. There has been some really positive impressions of people who went to the show, but I think that has to do with the theme park they created as a bit of a pop-up. Wolfenstein 2 looked great, and it was cool to see some Switch love, but on the whole, I don't think that this warranted a whole show for me. And the PC gaming show, so that was a D+ for me, really. The PC gaming show was not really my thing again, but I have to say the presenter was all kinds of charismatic, and apart from an Intel esports thing, there was much less of a focus on tech this year, which was welcomed, and on the whole it was quite fun to watch. C- from me. Now we're on to Ubi, and oh my god, Ubisoft was wow, just wow. I was really worried that with Aisha Tyler not hosting this year, it wouldn't be as interesting to watch, but it was so brilliantly put together. Starting off with a bang with a Mario plus Rabbids showcase, Miyamoto and Eve skit made me all warm and fuzzy inside, and it's these moments that I really love in gaming. I recognise I am quite biased to Ubisoft as a company, as I do really like a lot of their output, but I thought they put together a really great showcase this year. Even the Crew 2 and Steep Olympic Winter Games thing looked interesting to me. Throw in Far Cry 5 and Assassin's Creed, just fantastic. Also, the Just Dance showcase this year didn't derail the show as it has in other years. And obviously, Beyond Good and Evil 2, fantastic. Hopefully, we'll learn more about the platform that it's coming to soon. Other than Mario plus Rabbids, which looked crazy fun, the other most exciting thing from this was the Skull and Bones. I'm a huge Black Flag fan, and to get a game based on this concept is incredible, and I'm really excited. Who'd have thought that 2018 was going to be the year of the pirate with this and Sea of Thieves? Obviously, I'm Team Skull and Bones and not Team Sea of Thieves, as oddly, for me as a British person, Rare's weird British sense of humour doesn't really do it for me. Starlink, No Man's Skylanders, that I'm seeing it being called, looked fun, although I am a bit worried about a Toys to Life game in late 2018, but it's good to see some Switch love from Ubi. On the whole, fantastic conference from Ubi, and clearly the standout so far for me, a rating of an A from me. Sony. Now, this was a really oddly framed podcast with very little narrative, and they just showed games. But oddly, no big announcements of things we didn't know about, other than the second time Shadow of the Colossus has been remade. Overall, it was a good show. I'm really psyched for Uncharted Ladies' Night, and I thought that Spidey looked really good, if a bit quick-timey in parts. I also thought that Days Gone demoed much better this year, and I'm quite looking forward to that now. I'm wondering if this Monster Hunter is a spin-off, and hopefully we'll get Monster Hunter 5 for Switch after all. I don't play Monster Hunter, but I recognise the benefit for the Switch platform to have Monster Hunter over there. And I recognise that people do like playing that game on the go. Sony's stuff seemed a bit far out, mainly 2018 titles, which makes me wonder what is their big holiday release first party this year. And makes me think that maybe Nintendo has a chance to sort of clean up this holiday with their sort of release schedule. One thing I was disappointed about was, for me, the lackluster showing that VR got at PlayStation. I'm really seeing very little for me over the next year, and I am a PSVR owner, and I'm really surprised, actually, across the board, how little VR has been displayed across all the conferences, other than a little bit of a showcase at Ubi and a slightly bigger showcase at Bethesda. I'm a bit wondering if PSVR is the Vita of 2017 and is a bit sort of dead on arrival. Crazy though that the Vita is getting a game release from getting Undertale this year, so maybe Vita not totally dead yet, although kind of is. Rating for me is a B-. It was a really sort of interesting show, lots of stuff, boom boom boom, but a lot of it is a bit of a way out. Anyway, apologies for my big ramble-a-thon. Love your show, keep up the amazing work. Anyway, have a great E3, and hopefully Nintendo has blown our socks off as well. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you for that, man. I largely agree with what you said. Yes. I think you'll note that a lot of our conversation tracked that, actually.
But No Man's Skylanders?
No Man's Skylanders has me screaming. I know you said that other people have said that. I haven't heard it at all. This is my first time.
Yeah, you get credit for that.
And I am living right now.
I'm living and dying. I live, I die, I live again.
Yes, exactly.
Well, thank you so much for all your feedback. We love, you can always send us a little voicemail like that. But you could also give us subscriptions, ratings, and reviews on iTunes, Stitcher Radio.
Available on iTunes.
Google Play. If there's other podcasty places we should be, please let us know. We appreciate your ratings and reviews and subscriptions. We like your Facebook likes, and we effing love Twitter.
We effing love Twitter.
Our email is mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
Mailbuoy@gamebuoy.org.
And our home base is gamebuoy.org.
Gamebuoy.org.
And Captain Spike, where are our shout-outs? Shout-out to our shout-outs.
Well, as everyone out there in Internet Radio Land knows, you can, of course, listen to us on the Voice of Geeks Network over at vognetwork.com, where you can also hear such wonderful shows as Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the world's most popular MMO, Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice and from whom we steal so many of our cues. They're celebrating their 15-year anniversary right this very moment as we record. By the time you hear this episode, of course, that will be done and dusted, but you should check out their podcast archive and listen to it anyway.
Indeed.
You can also hear the Ranger Pridecast, where myself and Shane Alenko talk about the current season of Power Rangers, as well as the current season of the Super Sentai meta series upon which it's based out of Japan. You should also listen to the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail.
Oh, they haven't failed yet? No, I'm just kidding.
Although not quite on Vogue, you should also be checking out the Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin, as well as X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants.
They also just launched in their sister shows Queer Eye for the Princess Di, a Wonder Woman podcast.
Fucking slay.
Yeah, that name killed me. No Princess Di jokes intended. It's been 10 years, 20 years, right?
It's been more than 10 years, girl. Calm down.
20 years, yeah.
We need to wrap this up. So, Slaggy, we have a show. I do it with you. So does Rob from Orange Lounge Radio, Delvin from VG Realness. It's focused on RuPaul's Drag Race current season. We do it every season. It's a ton of fun. It's called Reading is Fundamental. If you're listening to this and you watch Drag Race, you should probably be listening to that too.
Yep, we're wrapping it up next week.
Take us a place.
I'm going to take you to a game bar. Game Bar is the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch, along with VG Realness, serving up a dose of gaming chit-chat among friends. They just put up a great three-part E3 episodes. We have the Joystick Jockeys, two LGBTQ gamers, DJ and Ruben, who love games and love talking about them. They're having some iTunes trouble, so go check them out at thejoystickjockeys.com if you're wanting to check them out, because unfortunately, I can totally empathize with iTunes fuckery. I'd also like to shout out to our allies over at the Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, and where you can also hopefully hear more about Yuna and Luna.
Yes, kitty babies. Slay.
We have sister shows, the Sister Ship Anime Buoy, your port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. We'll be getting another one of those to you this month. And our other sister show, the Same Type Attack Bonus Podcast, or Stabcast for short, which is the podcast that we do with Trainer Salker, which is your twice-monthly look at the deeper worlds of Pokemon. Again, looking forward to bringing you another episode of that very soon. Our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated, the project that aimed to reorchestrate beautiful Zelda music into gorgeous symphonic sound. They forever closed their doors quite a while back, but will forever be pouring a 40 out into the Great Fairy Fountain, maybe while in just our skivvies as Link.
What?
As Link, not as IRL, though it's so hot. Skibbies.
I do not approve. Thank all y'all out there in Internet Radio Land, both for putting up with our recent absence and for listening with us here today. It's deeply appreciated. I hope you've had even a quarter of as much fun as we've had talking to you today, because this has been a ton of fun. We will be back at you probably in 2 weeks, but if I can convince Slaggy, maybe we'll do another episode next week to sort of catch up with where I wanted to be in terms of our episode count. Until next time, though, keep gaming.
Keep gaming.
Keep thinking.
Keep thinking.
And it's a me, Mario.
Let's do the Odyssey.
Hello, everybody out there on Orange Lounge Radio. This is Captain Spike.
And First Mate Sidekick.
From the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
We just wanted to wish you guys a very, very happy 15-year anniversary. What you guys do is really incredible. We wouldn't be doing what we do if not for you guys. And so all of our love and support go out to you tonight on this special day, Rob, Jamie, and Loki.
Oh my god, it's almost your sweet 16. Hearts.
There better be a party for that, y'all. Anyway, have a great show. Congrats again, and see you, Space Cowboy.
Yarr!